brought to my attention the Mora, something in the Mora, part 3, chapter 51, which has a relation to something we took up before. And this is what it's in, let me see, page, depends which Mora you have. If you have the paperback one, I don't know, but if you have the, it's a page in, is how much? 384 in the paperback one and 292 in the one that has the annotations of Friedlander. Okay. That's the Hebrew Publishing Company one, right? Yeah. Okay. So look at this. The philosophers have already explained how the bodily forces of man in his youth prevent the development of moral principles. In a greater measure, this is the case as regards the purity of thought, which man attains through the perfection of those ideas that lead him to an intense love of God. Man can by no means attain this so long as his bodily humors are hot. What he means is he's very healthy, very ill. The more the forces of his body are weakened and the fire of passion quenched, in the same measure does man's intellect increase in strength and light. His knowledge becomes purer, and he is happy with his knowledge. It's been ascribed by our sages to none but to Moses, Aaron. The knowledge of God is strengthened when death approaches. Of them Scripture says, "Thy righteousness shall go before thee. The glory of the Lord shall be thy reward." The intellect of these men remains then constantly in the same condition, since the obstacle is removed that at times has intervened between the intellect and the object of its action. It continues forever in that great delight, which is not like bodily pleasure. We have explained this in our work, and others have explained it before us. It would seem clear that, on the contrary, that old age is really the time for perfection, better suited for perfection than youth, which is in contradiction to what we said last time, that where the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah say that on the contrary, if a person leaves it to old age, he can't do it. Tshuva in old age is not really a good tshuva. So what's the answer? Is it a contradiction or not? Is that we should, it would seem you should be able to do a better tshuva when you're older, because then you have more intellect, greater intellect, strong intellect.
Your
bodily desires have decreased. You see, there's a difference between a person being subject to his passions and a person who really follows his passions. The following of the passions means that the person's soul has, because of the influence of the passions, has decided that that is the good. See, this becomes the good. And once this becomes the good, so naturally the essence of the soul partakes of this object. And he wants to, and he follows it. Now, That's one way that the soul is involved in the passions. Another way is not where the soul considers it the good, but nevertheless, since the person is young and the passions are very strong, so they exert a certain influence on the soul. But in that case, the soul really is in contradiction to the passions, but it can't help itself because of the fact that the passions are very strong. Now, in directing the course of the soul as to which good it should take, that must be done in youth. That must be done in youth. What the good is must be done in youth. Because in old age, it is too difficult to change the attachment and the establishment as to what the good is. However, if in youth the good has been established as the non-material, the good has already been established, You see, once the good has been established, then as the passions reduce their influence, as the influence of the passions is reduced, then the soul becomes strengthened. So in old age, when the Rambam says that in old age there is a greater intellect, what the Rambam means is that once the good has been established, then when the person in old age is free from the passions, so then that good becomes realized, emerges to a greater degree. But and ultimately it finds its ultimate form in the situation of death. An amazing thing. Like the Rambam says, that death really is not death, it really is a, how does he word it? He says, yeah, it's, in truth, it's a deliverance from death. See? That the way human life is organized, it comes out that it works in the opposite direction as the animal. As the animal reaches a prime, and then he goes down until he dies, and that's the end. Whereas in man, it's just the opposite. The prime for man really is not the prime; it's just the beginning. The prime is a time of life which a person must use to establish what the good is. If he does that in his prime, then as the body weakens, he keeps gaining. He gains more and more. And death is the highest level. That's why it says that Alpir Hashem, that's what it means, Misas Nashika, the Rambam explains. You see, but the time to establish the good is in youth. In old age, a person cannot establish, cannot change the what he considers the good. And if he does, it's only a partial change. Not a Tshuva Gemara. Soul has established something as the good. If it's the real good, let's say. So then what happens? Then the soul is attached to that and desires it. That is his essence. But then, like I said, we went through how the essence changes. We did Kedoshim to you. You should listen to that tape if you didn't hear it. Kedoshim to you. But once you understand how the soul becomes, partakes of that good, so then the physical is in contradiction to it. So as the physical releases its hold and its influence is reduced, then the good emerges to a greater degree. Until by death, at the time of death, it reaches the height. That's what the Rambam is like. Really the apex. Shvi Melchus Yisori HaTorah. Rambam says, Yisori HaDas Leida She'okel Menabes Mei Oda. That God gives prophecy to man. Ve'inan Hu Achola El Al Chocham Gadol B'Chochma Gibor B'Midosov V'lo Yeh Yitzro Mizgabar Lov B'Dover Ba'olam Elohu Mizgabar B'Daito Al Yitzro Tomet V'hu Baldei Rechava Nechon Ad Mod. One time went through this Rambam. At any rate, Adam, he says, Adam Shehu Memula B'Chol Amidas Ha'elu, person that has all these qualities, Sholem Begufo, Kishi Kones Lepardes V'Yimashich Bosan Ha'inyanam HaGedolim Arachokim Etilo Deo Nechon Olohavin Olohasik V'hu Miskadosh V'holoch Oparsh M'dachi Klal Ha'om Ha'ochem B'machshach Ha'yazman V'holom Z'azatzim M'lava Nachshosh Lo Tila Machshach. Anyways, he says, what happens? It's a long road until he finally, he says, Miyad Ruach HaKodesh Sharalov. Takes a few lines. But at any rate, the Rambam says that Sholem Begufa, the Rambam mentions. He must be healthy. Sholem Begufa means he must be a healthy person. He's physically healthy. So why is that so? On the contrary, it would seem that he would be more perfected if he's sick. People shouldn't make a mishabeach for somebody who's sick. Should make a mishabeach for somebody who's healthy. Also, a person's desires are reduced. This perfect man is stricken in age and is near death. His knowledge mightily increases. By the way, ability is lost after when a person gets older, because all the breakthroughs in science are made by young people. Yep. It's by 40, that's what they say. Something is lost there. Although, I mean, experts in their fields have retained their position of expertise even into their 70s and 80s. So maybe some creativity might be, ability for new breakthroughs might be lost. But the mind itself definitely, from what we see, doesn't really decrease measurably where the person loses his chokhmah. The physical, as the physical, you see the deterioration. I mean, depends on the body, but the way the body is constructed, the intellect is least affected by the disintegration of the body. Obvious that a person, even when he's sick, I mean, is he maybe physically weak, but his mind is still working. Constructed man, the mind is least affected by the of anything else, by the bodily, by physical debilitation. The premise is, you see, the way what Yadis maintains is. That the way a person's life is organized in a way that that he could reach the highest level of perfection. That's the way the person's life is organized. His youth, his old age, death, everything is made so that a person can reach the highest level. And any deviation from the system that God created will be a reduction in terms of the individual's perfection. In other words, there's an overall plan for human life, and that overall plan is one which a person can observe in the universal life of an individual. How long he lives, say his prime, his old age, his death. That all this is constructed in a way that lends itself most to human perfection. Now the thing is like this: in the earlier years, there's a certain strength and vigor that the individual has. Now that has advantages, has disadvantages. It's true, it has disadvantages because the passions are very strong, but it also has advantages because it's a time where a person can make tremendous breakthroughs. If a person directs his energy properly, so then he can make those, and he's shalom begufa, like the Rambam says, he has to be shalom begufa. Shalom begufa means he's physically in line with the plan that God has set up for human life. And if he's physically well, and he's healthy, and he's at the peak of his strength, then, like the Rambam says, kishi yikones lepardes, the Rambam explains a whole long thing over here. You see, all these things that the Rambam explains require tremendous energy. Tremendous energy. That's only found when he's showing begufo and in his prime, the prime of his life. That's when he could do that. Now, once he has done that, see, once he has accomplished that, then the reduction of the passions are really good, are an advantage to him. Okay. But the conquest cannot be made without prime of life and without being in full health. See, without that, if he isn't completely healthy, so then it's a diminution. So that life is worked out in a way that a person can reach, it's best suited for a person to reach perfection. That's why if a person is sick in the prime of his life, he can't do it. It's true that he has the advantage of the reduction of the passions, maybe. But that's not what he needs at that stage. At that stage, he needs the strength and the vigor to be able to involve himself in the in perfection, and in knowledge, and in chokhmah. And if he doesn't have it, then he'll never get that acquisition fully. If he has made the acquisition, you see, insofar as he can, and each person is on his own level, every person has a limitation. But insofar, the important thing is for an individual to be perfected insofar as his makeup is concerned, his nature, and his ability for chokhmah. So once a person has accomplished that in his youth, you see, then old age is a blessing. Because then the passions are reduced, and he continues, you see, to a greater degree in the way of life and the concepts that he has already established. But the establishment of those concepts really have to take place in youth, you see. The breakthroughs have to be in youth. But once the breakthrough is made, then there's actually, what we have to explain over here is that there's really two types of knowledge. The word knowledge, the term knowledge, is used in two ways. One way is the acquisition of ideas. That's one way. But there's another way, that there's another concept of knowledge. And this I always maintain with the Rambam. When the Rambam says in the Mora, I mentioned many times, when the Rambam says in the Mora, knowledge doesn't mean just ideas. What the Rambam means is how those ideas relate to the essence of the person, and how much the person partakes of these ideas, and how real these ideas are to the individual. Certain ideas that people have a lot of ideas, but they're not real, like we mentioned on Friday. A person knows he's going to die. How real is that to him? You see? So the acquisition of the ideas is done in youth, when a person is at his prime, when he has his full strength. But once he has these ideas, then the ideas to become a part of his soul, to become real. So they're part of his essence. And when this requires a reduction of the passions, and when this occurs, when they really become a part of his essence, that's when he enjoys the highest state. He enjoys the highest state when these ideas become real to his soul, and his soul actually is convinced and sees that this is the reality, because that's what perfection is. A person can know an idea, but what does it have to do with his perfection? It has very little to do with it. In order for it to have to do with his perfection, it has to be a part of his very being, a part of his very essence. And that can only be possible when there's a reduction of the passions that influence him and prevent the realization of the ideas that he has come to understand. But the breakthrough in terms of the ideas requires youth. So that really, the way a person's life is staged, you see, it is constructed in a way that he will reach perfection by going through the prime, acquiring the ideas, directing his energies towards the good, establishing what the good is, and then the reduction is a blessing. But if he didn't do this in the early part of his life, he can't. Once he misses the stage, each stage requires has a different expression of perfection. If he misses a stage, you see, he can't start in old age, start to make up for things that he lost in his youth. That's an impossibility. Man is constructed in a certain way. It says when this person is stricken and he's approaching death, what the Rambam means is, if a person's sick, he's not approaching death. It's a different frame of mind, and it's a different experience altogether. It means what the Rambam means is that this person who has lived a whole life, has had a lifetime of experience, he's perfected himself in terms of knowledge, and he's really seen what the true ideas are. Then, when even though he's getting very weak physically, he's approaching death, but the conviction and the realization of all the knowledge that he has takes place at that last moment, and that's the highest moment of his life, you see. But a person is sick in their youth, what kind of perfection is that? It's nothing. You understand? The Navi when he's young. Ram is talking about the Navi when he's Nichnas Lepardes, when he's perfecting himself in the prime of his life. It's a different thing. Structured for perfection.
You said a Navi?
Ram, why can't he become a Navi if he's not healthy? That's what the Gemara, it's a Chazal. Ein Nevu Ashora, Elo Al Chacham, Gibor, Elo Chacham Gibor V'Ashir. You see? So he has to be physically, actually, Gibor, the Rambam translates, means Mizgabar al Yitzro. It's true. But the Rambam says, but the Rambam has a requirement of Sholem Begufo also. Sholem Begufo also. So the, yes. So, I don't know. But the point is, I guess, the reason is, you see, well, you have to understand, I guess, you'll tell me, but there are a lot of people who are sick and who are greatly perfected. It's true. It's true. But it doesn't mean they could become the Nevi'im. Navi is the highest class of man. And in order to reach that, you have to have everything that's necessary, you see, to be perfected. And if you're missing one of those things, you just cannot reach that level. Doesn't mean he can't be a great Talmid Chacham, a great Tzaddik. We're talking about a Navi. Navi is the highest level of man. In order for man to reach that level, he must have physical health. In a person, even though the passions are strong, the mind can still establish what the good is. He knows what the good is. He can establish what the good is. If he investigates and he uses knowledge and he understands, not just to think that this is good. I mean, that's just not maratzis, but to really understand what the good is and why it's good. But once he does, then life's experience, all the experiences that he has in life, only serve to strengthen what the real good is. Strengthens it. As he gets older, he becomes more and more convinced as to what the good is, and then it becomes more part of his inner self. You see? It means in the Mora over there, that the human life is organized in such a way. Let's say a person gets sick when he's 50, so that should be good. So what's the answer? The answer is no. The answer is that this thing is worked out precisely. Otherwise, it's a step-by-step thing, but it's worked out precisely. How much should and when it should work. Quantitative factors are worked out. That this is the way for to reach perfection. Why should be mispal for chola? Person sick? Why? Because he's physically uncomfortable. Okay, I mean, chesed demands that you should really be concerned about any discomfort an individual suffers. It's true, but the real reason, the thing that's bad about the illness is that it prevents him from perfection.
That's what he's saying.
Very good. That's what Rabbi Mann says. That's why the Rambam has an Hilchos Deis about the care of the body. Why it's so important? It's so important because that's part of the system that God created in order for a person to reach perfection. It's the groundwork. You have to have that. That's right. If somebody would write a book on vitamins, you say that's Torah? Say no, he's not involved in Torah. But the Rambam has in Perek Dalet and Hilchos Deis, has precisely what foods to eat and how to live and all this. It's all Torah. A person learning Perek Dalet and Hilchos Deis is Torah. What the framework is. If the framework is just the person wants physical health, then I would say it's not Torah. If the framework is that the perfection is Hilchos Deis, then it's there, then it has a lach of Torah. Is that it would seem that the acquisition of perfection does have really limitations. In other words, there are stages. In other words, an individual has a certain potential. His potentiality, for instance, with regard to the acquisition of knowledge. He has a potential for the acquisition of knowledge. It's not an endless thing that if you keep on going with his youth, you keep on making more and more breakthroughs. You know what I mean? See? The individual seems that he has a certain potential. And these few years, the years of his prime, are enough for him to reach that potential, basically. See? Then he goes on to the next stage. It's not like an endless thing. That he can keep on going and making breakthroughs and breakthroughs if he had the strength. No, the soul has a certain ability, and it needs this situation in order to reach to fulfill its own potential of acquisition of knowledge. Then once it reached that, now what it needs is to have that knowledge become part of it to a greater degree. See, and that's what old age does. It's not like an endless thing. And most people feel, you know, that this is something that they keep on going and going. It's not so. Last week, you know, just before we leave this area, I just want to mention one thing. That we mentioned last week, we were talking about the folly of people who feel they know the Hashgacha, and they say this is Bashet, and the reasons why they do that because of insecurities and because of certain fantasies that they have. And we discussed this. But I want you to know that, I mean, what we did was we negated a lot of false ideas. But many times when we negate a false idea, we fail to posit what the right idea is. What is the right idea? What's the positive side of it? Maybe that's the negative, not. But what is true? See, what is true is, and we mentioned, a person becomes a... If a person is lives according to the way of the Torah, so if they expect that certain things will occur to them, certain goods are going to be theirs, it's wrong. But what can they expect? What do we know definitely? This should be emphasized. And what should be emphasized is that any person who lives the correct life, he can be certain that his state of existence has been, in terms of his happiness, has been increased. That's for sure. And that the more he partakes of Torah, the closer he is to God, who is the ultimate source of reality. And his status has definitely been improved. What we were saying last week was that people who are looking for particular things, usually physical things, they want to believe that because they keep yadas, that they're going to get it's just a natural thing that they should get these goods that they want. That's what they want to feel. This is wrong. This comes from they use and they have certain superstitions about these things. This is really peripheral avodah zarah. What a person should know is that definitely he has improved his status and improved his state, is closer to God, and has a better life. That is definite. That is what he should know. Okay? Just wanted to make that point clear. Because many times we emphasize the negative, don't emphasize the positive. It's important to know what the positive is, and that this is a reality. This is what is a reality. Life in a real way. In a real way, not in a fantasy way. Okay. Tesla. Asei Torascha Keva. Right? First thing is that a person should make his learning Keva. Keva means that it is the main thing in his life. We'll see, there are a few interpretations of Keva. Alright? Take Rashi. It's interesting, there's two Nischos in Rashi, and they're both opposite. Asei Torascha Keva. Shelo Tehe Kovei Itim LaTorah. A lot of people do that. He should not be kaveya time for Torah. Ela kol hayom ta'asen Allah hakeva. But all day should be the time for Torah. That's the first. That's one nusach. All right. Nusach achrina, second pshat. Tikva lecha itim lilmod b'chol yom. Dalet prakam ohei. You should set aside time to learn every day. 4 or 5 prakam. Okay? Alright, seems like a bit of a contradiction here. In other words, it's two levels. It's two levels. Two levels. The first, on the first level, where a person recognizes what the good is, recognizes Torah as the good, but he really hasn't reached the level where he's naturally involved in it, you see, but he knows that that's what he wants. This is it, I have to get this. But at that moment, at that point, he still isn't on the level where he's just automatically involved in learning. See? But he wants to acquire it. So then, that's the second shot. Tikva lecha itim lumod b'chol yom. That a person must set aside time every day to make sure that he learns. See? And then, through that, he'll develop, and in his pursuit, as he keeps growing, he'll reach a level where it'll be kol hayom. That'll be kol hayom means that's really the mitzvah lasok b'divrei sarah, which means that is his main preoccupation of the day. That's the day. He gets up in the morning. His first thoughts are, "Boy, I can't wait to understand this gemara over there. What did we leave off yesterday? You know, how does this chazal work? Amazing thing. All right, I have to go do business now. You know. All right. Then he does in the middle, his mind keeps coming back. This is the essence. You see, that's a level. That's kol hayom ta'asen olacha keva. This is the essence of his day. But he can't achieve that level unless he goes through first the lower level, and that's why it's interesting. That's why he says dalet prakam ohei. Why does he give an amount dalet prakam ohei? Because in the first level, a person has to gain the ideas. When he first wants to learn, he has to gain the ideas. He has to learn the facility with the text. He has to learn the facts. You see? Though he has to go through that process. That process is a difficult process, and he has to set aside time. Bikaveya. He has to set aside time. It's not easy. But once he breaks through that, you see, then it becomes a spontaneous involvement. Spontaneous involvement is kol hayom zmana. There's no more kaveya itim. That's the pshat. Okay. Now, the Rabbeinu Yonah has an interesting pshat. He says, "Kemo Shamayam Raseh Teros Vakeva, Kemo Shamur Bavos Reb Nassim." Like they said, Novus Reb Nassim, Kola Osa Teroso Iker, Omalachto Tvela, Osinoso Iker Lolam Abba. That anyone that makes his Torah the essence and his work subordinate, then they make him Iker, essential in Olam Abba. They make him essential in Olam Abba. V'chola osa tarasa tfela. Anyone that makes his Torah secondary in importance, omalachto Iker, and his work is the essence of his life, afilu omayo roi lios began Eden. I'm sorry. Ratzaloma, afapi, I'm sorry. Ratzaloma, afishlo osa avera. Even though the man didn't do any averis, he was a righteous person. V'lo osa Torah Iker, but nevertheless he didn't make the Torah the essence. He says, "Afilo mo'ya roi lios began Eden." Even if the person was fit to be in Gan Eden, tofel yiyeshama, will be secondary over there. What's the pshat? Interesting, Rabbi Yonah, huh? Him secondary, so they make him Iker, make him, what is the pshat? Like this. What remains in Olam Haba is only the attachment to Torah. That's what remains in Olam Haba. See? That's what remains. All the attachments to the physical, like we spoke about on Friday. So all the attachments to the physical are gone. Now therefore what happens is like this. If a person's soul, its essence, is tied to Torah, it has a secondary involvement. So in Olam Haba, the attachment to the physical is gone. So the secondary is lost. But he osin oso iker sham. But his essence is there. That's what it means. They make him into an essence, because that's what he is. You see? However, if a person's essence, his essential desire in life, and his essential satisfaction and his attachments are really to the physical, but he likes Torah too, in a secondary way. So, what happens in Olam Haba is simply he loses his essential attachments. So, osin oso tfela. So, all that's left of him is a secondary. He's living in a secondary way over there. His existence is secondary.
But it will develop.
No, it won't develop anymore. That's it. In that respect, the soul can increase insofar as knowledge in Olam Haba. As Chazal say, that a person that learns Torah in this world doesn't understand that he's zochah to learn and understand it in the next world. What does it mean? Even if you learn Torah in this way, you don't understand it in the next world, God will explain it to you. It means is that in the knowledge, in the particular knowledge you can gain in Olam Haba, but not in your attachment, not into the degree that the soul is attached to knowledge. To the degree that the soul is attached to Chochmas HaTorah is only established by our life here. That's the Bechira. This is the place to establish that attachment. And once, if the person is attached to it in a secondary way, it would be as if only a secondary part of the soul exists. See? What's missing over there? Nothing besides Chochmas HaTorah. That everything that is true Chochma is a part of Chochmas HaTorah, and is in the framework of Chochmas HaTorah, and anything that's not Chochmas HaTorah is not Chochma. That's it. Say Talmud Torah Asherish V'Iker. He says, make this the essence. V'chol Sh'or Iskecha Nimshachem Acharav. Everything must be subsidiary, secondary for to Torah. Okay. Now it says like this. The Rambam says. The way you see the essence of Yadus is that Torah is the Iker. Torah is the Iker. It doesn't say I say Tfiloscha Iker. Torah is the Iker. Torah is the Iker. All right. We'll soon see. But the thing is, as a matter of fact, what? Chol shor eskecha nimshach ha-machrav. Right. And it all, everything is nimshach ha-machrav means that, what's the lashon he has over there? Tefillim he has? Tefillim, okay. All right. Nimshach ha-machrav means that it supports it. That's the implication of, that's the way Ibn Tibbon learned shot. Yeah. Okay. Now it's like this. In nizdame, nizdame. Interesting thing. Vim lo is damein, lo is damein. The ein nezek be butro. Unbelievable thing. The Rambam gives a criterion to be able to tell how, in what way it's considered secondary. So he says, in this damein is damein. If you happen to be successful, fine. Vim lo is damein, lo is damein. You didn't get it, also good. Also fine. The ein nezek be butro. And there's no harm in not attaining it. Unbelievable thing. But what is that there's a different feeling that a person has when he doesn't get what he really is after. That's what the Rambam says. It's a different psychological experience. See? Now, if a person is tied to something, a person wants something, he wants a car, let's say, he wants this. Now, if he doesn't get it, it's a tremendous disappointment. A certain experience that a person undergoes. He's disappointed. He wanted that thing, so he's disappointed. That means that thing was the good. And when he didn't get it, that's tremendous disappointment. Okay? Ram says that this disappointment should not exist in the perfected man's life. In this domain, this domain. If he wasn't successful, there can't be that experience of disappointment, because that really was never the essence that he was after anyways. It was never after it for its inherent sake. You see? In perfection, you can't have any disappointments. Of course, in perfection, the person does act a certain way. In perfection, there's no disappointments. In perfection, perfection is that a person's in line with his own reality, and he moves along naturally, doing things which raise him to a higher level insofar as he can. So there's no such thing as disappointment and perfection. If a person's disappointment, he wanted to be able to learn a Masechta, and he didn't learn the Masechta, that disappointment is not because of his perfection. That's his own imperfection, because he set this up as he wants to satisfy a certain emotion, a certain egoistic emotion. You see? That's not really Torah. But insofar as real Torah is concerned, there cannot be any disappointment, because by definition, perfection means you're in line with the reality that God gave you, see, and you move along doing what you're supposed to. If you made a mistake, then you do tshuva. That's the thing. There's no such thing as disappointment. No place for disappointment in perfection. See, no place. What do you mean you're disappointed? You're disappointing yourself you didn't have error. What's bothering you? In other words, your ego is bothering you about error? On the contrary, you didn't have error, now you do tshuva. Recognize it. This is the perfect. This is the way to do it. There's no place for the experience of disappointment. So Ram says, that's why he says, in this dame, this dame. He says, how could you tell what a person's really attached to? What is this? What's the ikker? He says that you could tell like this. If you see if he's disappointed, so it shows you that there was an attachment to the physical. He's disappointed. I missed that. That's what I wanted. See? That's ikker already. That's ikker. That experience means that's the ikker. If it's not the ikker, then there can't be any disappointment. What did you miss? Never really cared for it. You see? So the perfected man, according to that's what it means. Rambam, what the Rambam does over here is he gives a shear of tuffel. What does it mean tuffel? Secondary. Of course, everybody says secondary. Very nice. Good. Many things learning. Secondary. There's a way the Rambam says that you could check to see whether it really is secondary. If it's really secondary, the experience of disappointment will be alien to you. There's no such thing as being disappointed about any material thing. That's a measuring rod, right? Learning should not be goal-oriented. Learning should be an experience where a person simply sits down and relaxes and is ready to enjoy the Chachmas HaTorah. Even Akasha is an enjoyable experience. It's something that attracts the mind. He enjoys the fact that the mind is attracted to the knowledge. That's the state of mind of Torah.
Okay, we're putting on a definition of laziness that we did last week at 5.8.83. putting that at the end of it now.
He's lazy. I couldn't say the person because he's lazy. It is not usually the case that this person would not be active were it something that's very pleasurable to him. And usually he's running for something pleasurable. So laziness usually implies some type of ethical imperfection. Not that he's averse to activity in general, but laziness is an ethical imperfection. There's really two lazinesses. One laziness is a state of mind, which is aversion to activity. The other laziness is like an ethical imperfection. Now, the laziness of the ethical imperfection, see, the laziness of the ethical imperfection has nothing to do with aversion to activity, because see, a person will move when it comes to something he enjoys very much. So what is the definition of that laziness? That laziness is really the inability to overcome resistances towards the good. What? Well, what people think the good is. But it's the inability to overcome resistances towards the good. See, the good is always an activity. The good is always an activity. The good is not something which is... A person doesn't perceive the good as inactivity. Even a person who thinks relaxation is good, he only believes it's good because he has to get back into condition. So, yeah, recharge his energies. See? So, but no one really believes that the good is an activity. But people recognize that the good has to be some type of dispensation of energy. And you can't have a dispensation of energy when you're inactive. So that's why people relax in order to regain their energy so they could be occupied or active with regard to some particular activity which they consider the good. Now, laziness is really the inability to overcome resistances towards the good. In other words, when a person has the good, so the good is an activity. Now, a person who cannot involve himself in that activity because he has resistances against it. A person has resistances to the good. There's one side of him that's resistant. There's one side of him that's evil, you might say. So this side that's evil, when the good is an activity, so it resists. I'm not getting into particulars. I'm just very general. Okay? Now, the person who cannot overcome these resistances is called lazy. But it's an interesting thing. The question is whether, colloquially, we have an expression laziness, but the question is whether such a thing in fact exists. You see? Wasn't it? Of course, you could question the people wouldn't call lazy. So in other words, if a person did not believe that something was good, they wouldn't call him lazy. They call a person lazy when he recognizes it's the right thing to do. What? Who are observing him would know his state of mind, they wouldn't call him lazy anymore. See? Because the criticism of laziness is, you're a lazy guy, you deserve it. See? Which implies that you knew all along that you should be doing this activity, but you resisted. Right? But the question that we have to ask about laziness is the following. That if laziness is a resistance to the good, so then it's an evil. Because resisting the good is evil, right? So why should it be different than any other evil, an active evil? In other words, why should we distinguish and set up as a separate category an evil when it resists good? Why not put it under the general category of evil, whether it's resistance of good or whether it's doing something which is evil? You see? It's interesting. You know what I mean? In other words, let's say a person kills somebody. That's evil. And if a person resists saving an individual or hesitates to save somebody's life, it's also evil. So why should we consider one lazy? Why should we set up a separate category? I mean, conceptually, you have to ask this question. Why should we set up a separate category? As laziness, one is nothing more than evil. See, good, the good only has one form. The good is an activity. It only has one form. But evil has two forms. Because evil, right, because the not doing the good is one form, and then just doing evil. Doing something evil also has an activity.
Why is it
resisting
evil?
Resisting evil. You question also. Why is it attempt to resist evil? Resisting evil? I never heard of it. You can't put us in a category because of the fact that people recognize, or people believe, that if I don't do an action, I am not as liable. I'm not as evil, really. In other words, if I outright go and do an action that's evil, then I definitely am an evil person. But if I simply didn't do the good, in that situation, I'm not recognized as being essentially evil. People have people consider that to be less evil.
Right.
Because whether it's true or not is a separate thing. That is a psychological phenomenon. And logically, I don't know if it really makes any difference. Because what difference does it make if I have the ability to save somebody's life? And I refrain from doing it, or if I kill somebody, basically, but psychologically, same result. The life is lost because of my addiction to evil, right? So what difference does it make whether I did an action or didn't? And logically, I don't know if you can answer it. But psychologically, a person really feels that there is a difference. You see, the Torah takes into consideration this difference. And with regard to Onus Bezdin. There is no, well, it could be for other reasons. Also hard to prove resistance, but halachically you see that a lo sasa is much worse than an asay. A person violates a lo sasa, it means he does an action. He does something. It's much worse than if a person fails to do an asay. So to do an asay is only two times as curse. It's bris milah by carbon pepper. It's worse than if a person fails to do an essay. Failure to do an essay is only two times as curse. It's bris milah by carbon pepper. Otherwise, there's no. Matter of fact, the Rambam says that there's hardly Yisrael that doesn't have an essay. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Kavanah says if a person. With regard to bringing an Ola. So if he inherits an Ola, so he brings it. The question is, an Ola is Machapa Nasei? So he says, Ein Lecha Ishmi Yisrael Shlova Valasei. So the thing is that people consider it a separate category. Like they recognize that resistance laziness really is resistance to doing the good, which a person perceives as, I just didn't get around to it. I just didn't, right, yeah, it's a rationalization. I just didn't, that's what they call lazy. Lazy is really the conscious excuse for the differentiation. In other words, the truth of the matter is like this, that a person who is lazy means he resists the good. Resistance to the good is an evil. But the person doesn't consider himself as if he really resists, as he really wants evil. See? I just didn't get around to it. So you give an excuse, I was going, I'm lazy. See? Lazy is really the Meira Hetta. You know what I mean? It's the rationalization that the person uses. The term lazy is really rationalization the person uses to disguise the true psychological state. The true psychological state is where the person simply cannot overcome the resistance. He has resistances. The person comes late to learn. The person comes late to say it. So what is the thing? It means that there's a certain resistance to the learning. There's a resistance there. You call him lazy. You know, lazy. The thing is there's a certain resistance to the learning which he's grappling with. And the compromise is that he can't not come because one part of him recognizes it as the good, the other part resists. So the compromise is he comes late. That's a compromise. People call him lazy. Now, if he didn't consider it the good, then they wouldn't, if he didn't consider it the good, they wouldn't call him righteous. In other words, if a person does not consider something to be the good, you can't call him lazy because he doesn't do it. That's true. That's true. But the reason why society calls them lazy is because society assumes that they have the same value system as they're working on. See? That's right. But the truth of the matter is not always so. You might be a person that simply doesn't value work. And the like you say, people learn, so society calls them lazy. Right? But the truth of the matter is that they aren't lazy if they have a different value system. That was a famous story of Thales. Thales was a philosopher, pre-Socratic, one of the earliest Greek philosophers. So he was an astronomer. So he, what he did was, he knew 1 year, he calculated 1 year that there was going to be tremendous rainfall. Now, since he knew the rainfall, there was going to be tremendous rainfall, he knew there was going to be a very big grape harvest. So he bought up all the presses, wine presses. Bought up all the wine presses. And then the time came along, the harvest was great, and they brought in, and he had all the wine presses. So they had control of the market. So they made a fortune of money. So he said, why did I do this? He says, I wanted to show the world that they consider the philosopher lazy. It's not really his inability to make money. They say a philosopher is, has no ability to make money because he's lazy. It's not because he's lazy. It's just he doesn't choose to do it. He maintains that the philosopher is in the same value system. So he's caught up in the same value system, so he's lazy. But that, of course, is you know, he can't universalize that way. But it's an unjust... it's untrue. It's an untrue accusation. But if they would know that the philosopher has a different value system, they wouldn't call him lazy. All right, I think that lazy is not so bad. Lazy. It's a disguise for the true lazy. The term laziness is a disguise for the true what's truly going on underneath. What's truly going on underneath is resistance to the good.
It isn't.
Oh, it isn't. The truth of the matter is, philosophically, it's an evil like any other evil. But it's an evil with a rationalization. So psychologically, people do not really... It's a good-feeling evil. It's a comfortable feeling evil. You can live with it. He's lazy. He's not a killer. He's lazy. That's not true. If the guy was operating under a different value system, then he wouldn't do the good at all. See, he does the good, but he does it very late. He's slow at getting there. See, if he had a different value system, he'd never do it. You'd be right. That case wouldn't call him lazy. But if the person, like he said, if somebody's drowning, and by the time you get there, too late, so he doesn't have another value system. Usually you see the lazy, that's why it says, Al-Sada Ish Otzer Lavarti. Shiv Al-Kerem Adam Chaser Lev. V'nei Ola Kulo Kamshunim Kasu Panav Charelim V'geder Avon of Nasa. That Pasuk in Mishle. I was supposed to say, I passed by the field of a lazy man. And the weeds were growing over there, the thorns, and the fence was broken down. So he explained, what is the pshat? The pshat is that, it's a foolish type of compromise, because what happens is that the little bit of work that he could have done, see, to keep it going, would have saved him a tremendous amount of work now, because now the whole thing's gone. Once he let the weeds grow up, it's too difficult now to take care of it, right? And then once the weeds grow up, people think nobody lives there, so they break down the fence. One thing leads to another. Now, economically, it's foolish, because the man, that's not that the man doesn't value, or the man likes to have thorns in the field. He likes weeds. He enjoys weeds, and fine. But the man himself will admit that it was a loss. Now, it wasn't worth it, because now it'll take so much more energy to get it back. Loss of money, loss of property. So why did he do it? because there's an inner resistance to the good. In this case, the good, of course, is a muscle. Here, the good is the keeping the field in good condition. But what he's referring to, of course, what the nimshal is referring to keeping your life in order. If the person doesn't keep his life in order, he resists working on himself and changing himself. That resistance results in a tremendous loss, because he would have, had he been involved, he would have been able to maintain himself on a certain level. And then when he lets himself go, so the way down is a very quick one. One thing causes another. First the hurt by the field. Once there's a breakdown of one system, then the next system goes. Now all he had to do to maintain the first system was a little bit of work, but there was tremendous resistance. That's so he's up there. And everything except the good. That's one thing you can't take as a case of friends. Because the it's an impossibility. You take a vacation from certain activities, but those activities you can't maintain are the good. A person can take a vacation from working because he doesn't maintain that working is the good per se. So working is a means. Now he can't take this means anymore, so he takes a vacation. But how do you take a vacation from the good? It means I'm not going to have the good now for a certain amount of days. It's impossible.
It's classifying vacation as
vacation from the good.
No, whatever you're doing, you classify as good, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's what people say. That's right, you're right. As a matter of fact, most people think that vacation is the good. At least they think that way. That vacation is good, and the only reason they're working all the time is in order to be able to take a vacation. And it's the average workman's mentality. Not a businessman.
What's
workman.
Resistance?
A rape of the emotions over the mind. That's what they call it. It's a famous phrase for that. A rape of the emotions over the mind. Yeah, at the time. But the point is that everybody agrees when it comes to the senses, he's going to admit it was wrong. In other words, in his real state, in his sane state, he's going to recognize it's only a temporary, he's overcome at that moment by the emotion. At that moment he's overcome. True. But that itself is not considered excusable. So that's why they criticize him by saying he's lazy. In other words, what they say, when they say lazy, they say that this emotion overpowered his whole reasoning structure and caused him to be distorted momentarily. Later, he'll come back to his senses and say, hey, what did I do? And that's true. I mean, laziness, the phenomenon of laziness, definitive by definition, implies that the person will regret it. It implies regret. Laziness implies regret. Laziness implies that the person, worthless. Right. He's saying that that there is justification for saying that laziness is not as bad as doing an act of evil. Because doing an act of evil, since a person by nature is not active, in other words, he's not in an active state, before he does something, so in order to act, you have to make a decision. He has to change his status quo. So if he made a decision to do evil, he is more evil than a person who simply is resisting the good. Yeah, certain premeditation, whereas over here, he's just resisting the good, but he didn't make a decision to do evil. Whereas a person would outright decide to refrain from saving another person's life, then people would consider him to be just as evil, perhaps. You know what I mean? That's a good point. That's a very good point. But with regard to doing of evil, I mean, it's not, you can't compare it, because he didn't make a decision to do evil. It's good. Compromise. What?